1360 WVOX.
Now, live from Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX, the Greenberg Report, with Greenberg Town Supervisor Paul Feiner. You can join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Now on 1460 WVOX, here's Greenberg Town Supervisor Paul Feiner.
Good morning. My name's Paul Feiner. I'm the Greenberg Town Supervisor. And today we have an interesting program. I'm joined with some interns, Zach Bergenfeld, John Rood, Josh Ringel, David Schumann, Andrew Oberlander. And we're going to be talking with Michelle Krell Kidd and Kathleen Cochran about smell and their interest in smell. And this is something that is that many of us take for granted, but if we lose the sense of smell, as some people do, it's not the most pleasant experience. Michelle and Kathleen, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Maybe we could start by telling us why this topic interests you.
I guess I'll start. Professionally, I work in the flavors and fragrance industry. I'm a trained nose, so I'm one of those people that can taste or smell things and pretty accurately describe them. It's my passion. It's something I've been very good at since I was as young as I can remember. And I have a blog called Glass Petal Smoke, which reflects those interests.
And Kathleen, what about yourself?
Well, I actually have always enjoyed having a fairly keen sense of smell for most of my life. Now because I have Parkinson's disease, my sense of smell is sort of more at risk than most people's, and I'm very conscious of smell, so that's my interest.
Is it very aggravating if when you lose the sense of smell?
I guess, not having lost it myself, but knowing some people who have, I can say it's devastating, because without your sense of smell, all you can do when you eat food is taste all the tongue taste, which is sour, sweet, salty, bitter, and umami, and what's known as the trigeminal sense, which detects pressure, texture, hot or cold. So, if you've had a really bad cold and you can't taste your food, that's kind of what your whole life would be like. But fortunately, there's a little bit more awareness of this. There's one particular book I'd like to mention to any of your listeners out there called Navigating Smell and Taste Disorders by Ronald DeVere. He's a neurologist who has anosmia, and he's written about how to cope with it, what to eat, how to, work your lifestyle so that you feel like the loss of sense of smell doesn't work against you as much as, you would had you not had that information.
In terms of the question being a nose, I never heard of that. I don't know, has anybody here ever heard of that as a career goal?
No.
You have?
Tea tasters. Tea. I know that certain countries around the world, tea tasters, you taste tea and get the consistency of tea, consistency of any flavor. You're going to need a trained nose in order to eat that and be able to characterize the flavor.
That's correct. And actually, smell and taste are inextricably linked. So you have that in wine, which most of us are probably familiar with because that's a fairly big movement. Gary,
Vaynerchuk.
Vaynerchuk's pretty big. He's really made the world very aware of that. Coffee, right? That's pretty big. You've got a lot of people debating about, what roasts are better, what beans are better, and this is all because of the intersection of smell and taste.
In terms of smell, what happens when people start to talk about smell?
Well, if I might, Kathleen, and then I'll throw this to you for your opinion. I think it's very interesting that when you say the word smell, there's almost a negative undertone, like I smell something. If I say I see something, I hear something, there isn't that sense. And I think it's because smell is not looked upon like vision is in our culture. We are a very visual culture. You're in radio, you know that seeing is more appealing to consumers sometimes than listening, and that can be a struggle sometimes. So you have to have strong characters on radio to move your message. I don't know, Kathleen, do you want to add to that?
Well, just that... you know, we've talked about smell as kind of the stepchild of the senses, you know, that's somehow held in less regard or thought of less frequently when you think of things sensory. And it, as Michelle said, it has that kind of slightly, you know, nasty connotation, like, ooh, don't talk about smell. That's really not done in polite society. But in fact, it's a robust and very interesting sense. So we're here on behalf of smell.
Yes, and I will say this, that smell goes straight to memory. It goes straight to the limbic system, you know, through the brain. And that means you'll smell something, you'll like it or you won't, and you'll also instantly recall, if it's familiar to you, the experiences you've had smelling, et cetera. That's why Proust could wax on about a Madeleine in his book forever. But also, your memories of things like if you taste something, over time, you'll have different senses about what that means based on the context in which you taste it, where you are, in a restaurant, at home, the people you're with. And those senses are always evolving. And one of the things that Kathleen and I have talked about is we believe that the sense of smell is something that you should pay attention to and practice, since, you know, you're going to lose some of it as you age. So like any calisthenic exercise, perfumers, for instance, have to exercise their sense of smell through a method called Jean Carl, and they do it regularly. They smell things in families of contrast and likeness. And they're professionals. They do this every day, but they have to practice because of, you know, life unfolds different impressions in the sense world.
Yes, for people with neurological disorders like me, we readily accept, you know, that we have to practice our motor abilities. You know, it's a use it or lose it, really, truly has great meaning for us. And so, you know, people with Parkinson's and other disorders are told to exercise, and we do that. We exercise, we bicycle, we walk, we do calisthenics, we do Tai Chi, we do all kinds of things to keep our functioning going, but we don't do that for the sense of smell. And when I first met Michelle, I was so intrigued by the notion that you could actually practice smelling, that you could actually do that. And we sat down together and we did some smelling, and it was fun.
And it's very tough practicing.
It's fun. It's not tough. It means becoming aware of something perhaps that you weren't quite aware of in the same way. Trying to put words to things you haven't put words to before. And Michelle is wonderful about you know, she's a wonderful smell teacher.
Let me ask a question, because you indicated before that you've had Parkinson's since 1997.
Yeah.
Which is a long time, and you seem in very, very good shape. Do you feel that the fact that you've been exercising and practicing smells and doing smell exercising as well as regular exercising, has that enabled you to, has that enabled your illness to progress much slower?
You can't really say for sure where I would be had I not been doing these things. And I hasten to say that I think a lot of it's just luck. And, you know, and I certainly could exercise a lot more than I do. But among other things, you simply feel better when you do those things. Whether or not, or how it affects the long-term trajectory of the disease, there are some indications out there that it does, but for sure it makes living with this illness better.
In terms of the books on the subject,
yes.
You know, you mentioned that there's some people who have written about this.
Yes, actually, besides Dr. DeVere's book, there's two I would recommend. One is coming out in June. It's called Season to Taste by Molly Birnbaum. She's a woman who was about to go into chef school at the CIA, got into a car accident, and due to the head injury, lost her sense of smell and is trying to regain it. It's a wonderful book, actually, and I think it's very accessible because it talks about smell and taste together. Also, there's a book called Remembering Smell by Bonnie Blodgett, who lost her sense of smell after using Zicam. There was a lot of news about this, and this is another reason why smell is sort of coming out into the open. Those who have lost it are making noise, and it's all over the internet, and it's all over the media. And I think this is a really good thing, because in order to understand any sense, anything in life, examining its opposite will often give you a better perspective than just analyzing it per se. You know, when you stop and think what it would be like if you couldn't taste your food and you couldn't smell, you can't breathe for a minute.
Well, it's sort of interesting because now that, we're participating in this interview, I think I'm probably going to learn a lot. I'm going to now start noticing the articles much, much more. I wonder if Congresswoman Gillibrand is having any smell-related
That is a great question. It depends on, front or back trauma. I'm not a doctor, but there's a good chance there could be some kind of damage like that. And what's unfortunate is when you are dealing with head trauma, there is a lower statistical chance of regaining sense of smell. A sense of smell can also be lost by viruses, cold viruses. You can regain about...
Oh, we have to take a break and then we'll be
okay. Dark.
News at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour. Here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
From the Fox Business Network, Wall Street kicking off the session in the red, retailer Gap slashing its full-year earnings forecast, and the dollar gaining strength. Gap says commodity costs are rising faster than it can raise prices on clothes. Just past 10 a.m. Eastern, the Dow's down 85 points. Liberty Media bidding $1 billion for Barnes & Noble. The bookseller has been struggling with competition from Amazon.com and losing share, especially in digital book sales. Liberty Media owns interest in QVC, Starz Entertainment, Expedia, and SiriusXM Radio. As part of the deal, Barnes & Noble's chief executive must keep a stake in the company and have a role on the management team. And the former head of the International Monetary Fund will be released on bail today. Dominic Strauss-Kahn will be under 24-hour-a-day house arrest at an apartment his wife is renting in Manhattan. He has put up a $5 million insurance bond and will be watched by armed guards. His lawyers say these arrangements will cost Strauss-Kahn $200,000 a month. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Robert Gray.
E-discovery laws and government regulations require that certain businesses save electronic communication, namely emails, or face potential fines. Barracuda Networks, the world leader in content security, application delivery, and data protection, with more than 130,000 customers worldwide, can help. The Barracuda Message Archiver indexes and preserves all email communication while enforcing policies for regulatory compliance. Save email. Avoid penalties. Visit Barracuda.com/archiver to try the Barracuda Message Archiver free for 30 days. That's Barracuda.com/archiver.
Just over the Westchester Line in downtown Greenwich, there's a spectacular new dining venue, Gabriel's Italian Restaurant. At number 35 Church Street, owner Danny Gabriel has created a warm, stylish restaurant with a great becoming wood-burning stone fireplace. A perfect setting for some of the best food Greenwich and nearby Westchester has ever seen. The hand-selected prime steaks, seasoned with sea salt and crushed peppercorns and seared to perfection, are the real deal at Gabriel's. Plus all your favorites. Thick-cut onion rings, cream spinach, and Chef Joseph Giordano's mind-blowing pasta creations. And best news of all for all diners in our area, the gracious Tony Capasso, for years at Valbella, is now heading up the dining room at Gabriel's. For reservations, directions, and a very special welcome from Gabriel's maitre d', Tony Capasso, call 203-622-4223. Gabriel's, on Church Street in Greenwich. It's new, and it's fabulous.
This is the authentic voice of the people.
It's a community station.
AM 1460 WVOX.
1460 WVOX.
Now back to the Greenberg Report on 1460 WVOX. Once again, here's Greenberg Town Supervisor Paul Finer.
Good morning. I'm Paul Finer. I'm the Greenberg Town Supervisor, and we have an interesting program, a topic that most of us take for granted and don't really think much about, the taste of the sense of smell. And some people, especially if you have Parkinson's or other neurological illnesses, you may lose it, and then it becomes significant. Michelle Krell-Kidd and Kathleen Cochran have been our guests on this program. And during the break, Michelle gave us a sample.
It's Coffee Absolute.
Yeah, Coffee Absolute. And the student interns who, you know, are here were able to identify the smell, you know, quite easily.
Yeah, coffee is one of the most molecularly heavy, dense, and complex ingredients. We use it in perfumery, and obviously we drink it. It's got, if you notice when you smell the blotter, there's other undertones, like there's a nuttiness, there's a deep, like a chocolate, a caramel richness. These are all very strong dominant characteristics of coffee. So now that you know this, the next time you drink a cup of coffee, pay attention to what's in your mouth. You will taste what you've smelled on here for sure. I just wanted to...
That is sort of interesting. So if you didn't have the smell, then it would impact your taste.
Yes.
Your ability to taste.
Yes, and I want to kind of go back on that subject a little bit before we were talking about how you develop what's called anosmia, or the loss of sense of smell. We spoke about head trauma, and I was mentioning that colds can also cause anosmia. Most people who have colds can recover about 40 to 50% of their sense of smell afterwards. They don't know why that happens, if it's certain viruses, if it's how you're treated when you've had a bad infection. It's still a big unknown, although there's some pages on Facebook, actually, support groups for people with anosmia that are very interesting. One of the things I wanted to cover for your audience is there are certain aromas that have been pinpointed as indicators of Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's. In other words, these points happen, this smell loss occurs before the disease even sets in. And these are very important things to take into account, because often a person will lose their appetite and no one will really know why. Oh, food doesn't taste right, or what. And no one's thinking to ask the question. So I'd like to tell you what these aromas are. For Alzheimer's, menthol, clove, leather, strawberry, lilac, pineapple, smoke, soap, natural gas, and lemon. For people who have Parkinson's, the aromas that start to become unrecognizable are gasoline, banana, pineapple, smoke, cinnamon, licorice, coconut, banana, dill pickle, paint thinner, turpentine, cherry, and soap. Another thing that's worth mentioning about the sense of smell is that on a very primitive level, it exists to protect us, so that when we smell natural gas or rotten food and things like that, we know, you know, stay away from danger. And this is a critical point, because most people, if they're born with anosmia and have congenital anosmia, or if they, you know, acquire it, they need a support system with their family and friends. They need someone to smell the milk. They have to date everything in the refrigerator. There are all these aspects to their life that's very different from the way we live when we can't smell.
Let me ask you another question. If like a restaurant has, are there smells that a restaurant could sort of create that will hopefully help them with business?
Well, actually, there is a chef named Heston Blumenthal and a perfumer named Christoph Laudermill. And Christoph Laudermill creates aromas that complement things that you're eating in a dish in the Fat Duck restaurant in London. There's been a lot of talk about this. You can catch some of Heston Blumenthal's television specials on Google Video. The Christmas special's phenomenal. I had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Blumenthal, and I actually tasted frankincense, which blew my mind. It was less incense-y to taste than I had thought about. It was quite wonderful, actually.
Jeff?
Well, I had always thought, like, after he mentioned that, I was thinking about how, like, whenever you go by, like, McDonald's or Wendy's or something like that, you always smell the smell, and I always used to think that they were, like, doing something to project it out so people would
smell. Smell-washing you?
Yeah, kind of smell-washing you, so you'd go and be like, oh, I smell that. Now I'm hungry. I want to get food.
Well, I think what you're discussing are they're naturally occurring environmental smells, like you smell in a bakery, things that you smell when you go to a coffee shop. You know, you're smelling what's coming out of the vents. Mm-hmm. That's what's happening. But also that's making an olfactive impression on you. And that becomes part of the memories that you recollect when you smell similar things. Even if you're, obviously your backyard barbecue is going to smell a lot better than McDonald's.
Yeah.
But you'll come back in your mind to some of that a little bit. Not consciously, but now that you're discussing it, you might.
Along that same line, he said that, you know, McDonald's, it might affect you to want to come into McDonald's. And you said you worked in a perfumery. When people put on perfume or cologne, does that do something in the brain to like attract the opposite sex maybe?
Well, there's a couple of levels to your question. I think the first thing is, you know, is fragrance an attractant? Relatively speaking, yes, it is. Because if something smells good, you want to get closer to it. So the answer is yes. Is there a pheromone basis for it? Yes and no. We don't know. There's a lot of indication that musk is very sexy. But the irony of that is that most men can't smell musk. So women who are wearing these fragrances thinking that they're sexy are really just, you know, feeling good themselves and not, you know, attracting men because of the scent of musk.
Great. We're running out of time. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention?
I just would like to say that I think it's important to exercise your sense of smell. I think that people like Kathleen Cochran are a good example of why it's important to do that. And I would urge anybody, whether they have a taste or smell disorder or not, to get Dr. DeVere's book because it'll help you appreciate it. Plus, go to the blog, Glass Petal Smoke, www.glasspetalsmoke.blogspot.com, and you can find out about a new hot sauce called Yuzuit, which is just a taste bud mind freak.
That's great. So thank you. Do you have anything else before we run out of time?
Very quickly, I wanted to say that I've been speaking with a lot. Okay.
You could just
got to wrap it. Okay, just that your olfactory system affects your brain. It's the quickest route into the brain. When you're taking care of your sense of smell, you're taking care of your brain.
Thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. This was so interesting. Now, it's something that I'll always reflect on as a result of this interview.
Thank you
so much.
Great. I'm Paul Finer. We'll be back after this break. Thanks.